Oh, Father, align us with you. Make our work play and our creative effort effortless. Align us. Make us irresistible. Amen. So indulge me again. Everybody, take a moment. Look at the people sitting around you, left to your left, to your right, behind you, in front of you. It's helpful if you know their name, but not mandatory. So we're going to practice another one-word prayer tonight. As soon as you get settled, kind of you figured out who's around you, just close your eyes. And tonight's word is balance. I think peace, love, joy, they get a lot of play. But one of the forgotten words of this journey is balance. So don't embellish it. Don't throw their names out. Just think about the person in front of you and just balance. One word, balance. Now move to the person to your right. Balance. The person to your left. Balance. Who's left? The person behind you. Balance. Everybody take a deep breath. Hold it in for a second. So I would say that you're in full voice tonight. That was pretty awesome. It's this is not part of the talk, but a quick diversion here at the beginning. One of the places, one of the first times that I had any appreciation for being a speaker was probably 1988 or 1989, one of the first years I started running sound, then in the chapel, but here at Winnie CFO. And you'll note that the chapel has kind of a little bit higher stage, and so you can't just kind of reach up from the ground and adjust things. You actually had to come on stage. And I will go to my grave with the memory of one night coming up, and that sort of the entry song was "It Is Well With My Soul," and walking onto that stage as they were, I don't even remember who the speaker was, it doesn't, I guess, matter to the story, but I remember walking onto that stage to adjust a microphone, and just the power, just the kind of the waves of energy coming off of the floor as this body sang them onto the stage was amazing, was absolutely memorable and you know, palpable, and I got it. You know, it was kind of, you catch a bug sometimes, you know, and you're like, oh, this is why this is so special and wonderful. And sort of leaping off from there, just to notice, this is not part of the talk either, so, you know, ignore me if you choose to. But again, kind of that same time frame, I was, maybe 18, 19 years old. I was working as a dishwasher at a very fancy restaurant, and because that makes it more glamorous, you know, the fancier the restaurant. But I had just finished reading Brother Lawrence, right? Was it Practice the Presence of God? Practice in the Presence of God, is that the right title? And so I was feeling kind of full of myself, and you know, I'm there at the triple sinks, you know, washing pots and pans, trying to get out of the weeds. And the song that would always come to me is "When I Hurt My Neighbor, Lord." That would, I would just kind of over and over in my head. That's how I would practice the presence. So, another fine song choice made by the Holy Spirit tonight. All right, you ready? Should I begin the official talk? So, talk commencing now. All right. I woke up to the sound of trains, specifically the loud bang and hissing of two train cars coupling. Right, you know the sound that I'm talking about, that kind of clunk hiss sound. It had been a very short, long night sleeping in a field across from a YMCA. We were in Cumberland, Maryland, just across the river. I could see West Virginia from where I was. The train yard was actually in West Virginia. And I woke up, kind of that first moment as the sleep cleared, I wasn't exactly sure where I was. There was kind of some mercury vapor lights nearby, sort of shining down, casting down this pink light in the into the tent. And I kind of, you know how you do that sort of that blink, you know, three or four times when you're just trying to figure out, where am I? Right? I know this isn't home, but I've got a sort of place where I am. And so kind of through the tent walls, I began to realize, oh yeah, this is where I am. It was brutal hot. It was, even though we were kind of at a little bit of elevation, it was Labor Day weekend, and just super steamy. Just kind of, people have slept in tents, most of you, some of you, right? So you kind of know that sort of breathing, steamy humidity that you get in a tent. Well, so I've got that going on, right? I'm waking up. And then there's another train car, right? Clang, hiss. I'm a little more awake. And now I'm kind of fully understanding, all right, I'm on a trip. You know, I'm with the Troop 419 Venture Patrol. And we just arrived a few hours before. We'd driven up from Virginia Beach, about a five-hour drive. We set up camp in the middle of the night at this YMCA parking lot. In the tall grass, kind of across from the lot. Right next to the train tracks, there's a drawbridge, lots of lights, about as unpeaceful a place as you could want to sleep ever. But I'd gotten used to the noise. I'm a pretty good sleeper, I gotta say. You know, it's one of my life skills. In boot camp in the Navy, I stood up, I fell asleep standing up with my toes on a line, you know, it's, so, like, no support. I was proud. It was a big moment for me. So I'm a good sleeper. So I managed to get a little sleep in, but now kind of the birds are starting, the trains are clacking, this whole rail yard has sprung to sort of noisy life next to us. So I kind of feel around, I grab my phone to check the time, and it's not even quite 6 a.m. yet, so we still have time. So I laid my head back, and I'm listening. I can hear sort of the crickets and some snoring. It's amazing how many 12-year-old boys snore. Kind of the river going by, this is a little sort of leg of the river, but I can hear the trickle. And kind of the ballast of the streetlights, that sort of cracking hum. And laying on top of my sleeping bag, I was just, for that moment, on top of the world, right? I find I've never gone to sleep or woken up in a tent that the adventure didn't begin and end with prayer. Right, I think there's something about that type of structure that you just feel closer to outside. And I say you, I mean me, whatever, take it how you will. I feel closer to outside. I feel closer to God. I feel closer to my environment. And it is very conducive to prayer for me. And so I will always remember laying there on top of my sleeping bag, sweaty, but just blissfully at peace and blissfully thankful for that moment. Now, what we were about to do is we were about to get on bicycles and ride 184 miles down the Chesapeake and Ohio Canal towpath. All right, that was our mission, that was our goal, which is, I know, not a huge ride. I mean, there are people that actually make that ride in one day, 184 miles, start to finish, from Cumberland, Maryland, down to Washington, D.C., down to Georgetown. We were going to do it in 3 days. We were going to do about 60 miles a day. And again, I know not as any world record ride, but a pretty significant undertaking with about 30 of us, 30 boys. It was Labor Day weekend, so it was going to be a little hot, a little crowded. And this is something I didn't get to talk about much in my introduction talk, but I sort of touched on my life as a scout. But later in life, I had sort of a reprise as a scouter, which is an adult in scouting. So I spent 14 years as either the committee chairman of the troop or the scoutmaster of the troop, which is an interesting role. I rather think that for a lot of boys, I'm the first person to see them and treat them as adults. You know, as parents, we get these certain sets of expectations and a certain picture of our child. As a scoutmaster, it's just such a unique place to meet boys and watch them go from 10 years old to 18 years old. And the limitless way I'm allowed to view them, the way I'm allowed to push them without pressure. You know, I'm not a coach. It's not win, 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 right? Or you're doing it wrong, you're doing it wrong, you're doing it wrong. It's, you know, I'm not a pastor, so I don't have this, you know, this high moral authority to which I always have to, you know, cast everything down upon them. I'm a scoutmaster, and my role is to push them, but let them do things on their own. That's the whole trick to Boy Scouts. That's the thing, is that they are able to make their own mistakes, and they are allowed to do for themselves. And so in many ways, my job becomes keeping the parents out of their way, right? Just as a distractor of the rest of the adults. Hey, come over here. Let's cook some pie. I saw Earl was sort of dozing off over there, so. But it's a beautiful experience, and I can meet these kids and be open to them, and it's unbelievably fulfilling and fun for me. I did it actually. You guys know my son Ethan. Have you met him?
Yeah.
He pointed out to me that I had yet to mention his name in a talk, so we've at least checked that box. So my son Ethan is an Eagle Scout, and he came through the troop with me, and that was the reason for my scouting renaissance, was because I had a son. But I stayed about 6 years after, maybe almost 7 years after he was 18, after he was already out of the troop. And part of that was for events like this, right? I'm the sort of guy that I would go, man, it would be great to ride the entire length of the CNO Canal, right? It's so, you understand, the towpath is where they would take the mules and they would pull barges down this canal. This canal ran along the Potomac River, came out of the mountains in West Virginia, and they could take coal mostly, but other goods, all the way down this canal, down directly into D.C., I think it's 74 locks. It's not a huge elevation drop. It's only about 650 feet of elevation drop from the mountains down. But that makes it a nice tow path, right? Or, excuse me, a nice bike path, because it was a tow path. They tried to make it as level as they could because they had to walk their mule and oxen both ways. So there's not a lot of hills. It's a nice smooth ride. And it's a national park. It's a national park that's about 184 miles long and about 150 yards wide that runs down the length of the Potomac River. So I would think to myself, that'd be cool. That'd be a lot of fun. I'd love to do that. And I'd buy a book, and I'd read a book about it. And that would be fun. And so then maybe I'd go find a website and get on a mailing list, and I'd start a spreadsheet. Well, I need a bike, and I need this. So I'd build out my price. I'd start building my budget. And I would start crafting this trip, right? But I would never put a date on the calendar. And that was what Boy Scouts did for me, is all of these things that I wanted to go do and these experiences I wanted to have and the time I wanted to spend watching these young men grow and thrive and become, you know, respectable human beings, that forced me to say, well, we're going to do it Labor Day weekend, right? Now there's a date on the calendar, right? Now I can't just read a book about it. I can't just do a spreadsheet. I better get on my bike and drop a few pounds because, you know, dying on the CNO Canal path was not part of the plan. And so I'd done that. We'd spent the entire spring and summer riding. We'd done all these shakedown trips and this was sort of the crown jewel of this whole year of preparation, of getting ready for the CNO Canal towpath. I love bicycles, right? I think I've traveled by a lot of methodologies. I've, you know, been on planes and ships. I've walked a long way from time to time with my own 2 feet, been in automobiles. Traveled by canoe. I sailed up the Chesapeake Bay in a 22-foot sailboat from Virginia Beach to Annapolis one time. That was kind of fun. That may or may not be a talk later, you know, maybe. But just about everything for me falls short of the experience of a bicycle. And the bicycle is just this amazing blend of machine and man. It is, and take the gears out of the conversation, but based on gears, your input is your output, right? So you know I am doing this and I am moving from point A to point B, and it's me and my machine. And I'm in the environment. I'm not trapped by glass and windows and radios and phones. And it's just fast enough that you feel like you're making progress, but not so fast that you can't enjoy the trip. But most of all, bicycles require balance, right? Most people ride a bike, right? Once you learn a bike, what's the expression for everything else in life that you come back to? It's just like riding a bike, right? It is that sense of balance that we learn, most of us, many of us, as very small children, that we can always come back to it, and you can find that point, and you can get on that bike. I think swimming's similar, you know. Barbara talked about getting back to swimming. You know, it's another place where we have muscle memory. And it can be years since you've been in a pool, but somebody drops you in the water, you're going to save yourself. You're going to swim to the edge, and you don't lose those skills. And so I'd like to think that that balance is one of the things that Glenn Clark talks about significantly, right? It's that hind's feet to high places sort of concept, that balance of conscious mind and subconscious mind. I pulled this, so we talk a lot about his books, right? Ultimately, we've certainly referenced I Will Lift Up Mine Eyes this week already. We've referenced Soul Sincere Desire, which those of you kind of new to the process or if you haven't read one in a while, I would still say those are the big two. Is that fair to say? Kind of, if you're only going to read two Glenn Clark books, those are probably the two to read. Yeah, I'm getting some nods. Not to say they're not other good ones, but it's maybe unfair to call it a book, but you may have noticed Barbara's got this divine plan theme going on this week, right? We've heard a little bit about that. That was introduced in, it's about 30 pages long. It's not fair to even call it a full book, I wouldn't say, but the thought farthest out, right? It's kind of more of a essay than a book. It's what, 26, 32 pages long. But it includes the divine plan. And I think the first publishing of the divine plan, I don't know where it was published or where it would have been published before that. But the thought farthest out is Glenn's story of going to the island farthest out off Maine and the experience he had there and the dream that he had there that ultimately became the vision for the camps farthest out. And it's a great read. It's a very simple read. I recommend it highly. You can actually, thanks to the CFO International website, that booklet in its full is a PDF on their website. If you go there and look for literature in English, you can click right on the whole book and read it. It's a beautiful thing. But just a little snippet. When you relax your body, relax your imagination, relax your love, you will bring yourself into perfect balance, and then you will find the world around you. A moment before seems topsy-turvy or upside down is now in perfect balance too. A perfect world filled with perfect people, governed by a perfect God. And so we can say the easiest, the most effortless motion is falling. The only kind of perpetual motion that can be conceived of that could in any way be practical would be a motion of continual falling. Now, sometimes that's hard for me to get my head around. Normally, right, I hear falling, you know, and I think about things like, you know, ambulance 123R, you're dispatched to injury from a fall. You know, that's one of our primary calls. We go to falls of all shapes and sizes every day. And so that I have a sort of a reaction to that. I'm like, falling, right? But then I stop and I think about it. I'm like, you know, it's not the falling that hurts you, right? It's the stopping. And kind of makes me gather an appreciation for that. And you just think about this perfectly balanced fall through time and space. He goes on to talk about cats and how you can, you know, drop a cat and how they always land on their feet. which we don't always do. But it's that balance. It's that striving for balance in our minds and our prayer lives. And like riding a bicycle, I think there's a lot of that is muscle memory, right? It's not that there's a right way or a wrong way to find that, but as we look at that prayer from our core, that visceral prayer that we've talked about this week, or I've talked about this week, maybe you've heard about, who would dare call me? I have much more important things to do. But as we are working that prayer from deep within our body, the idea is that we allow that more and more to take over, more and more to pour from us and become that muscle memory, to become like riding a bike. So here I am in my tent. It's hot, sticky. I'm basking in it. I'd even dozed back off, kind of closed my eyes. I was in no real big hurry, but soon others began to stir. You know, if you've ever been on a camping trip, I think not just with Boy Scouts, but, you know, with the 4-H or your youth group at church or any group of kids, they're not known for their quiet. So people are starting to get up. And it amazes me, right? In spite of the range and collection of electronics and screens that we put in front of our kids right now, go try it sometime. It's amazing how quickly they can adapt and be fascinated by the woods, by a bug or a spider web or a wasp nest or an anthill or a stick. You know, I've seen boys do unbelievably imaginative things with, you know, sticks and a little twine because we took their... I just want to say we took their Game Boy away, but when was the last Game Boy? About 2000? I don't even know. But we take their little handheld gaming systems away. I guess now we just take their phones away. You don't need much more than a phone to play games. But they're up. So they're starting to make some noise, and they're making breakfast, which this particular trip is not a big, fancy affair. They're kind of carving up. They're boiling some water to make some... to make some oatmeal and get some food in their stomachs. And I told you, they're sort of self-led, especially so the Venture Patrol is a group of the older guys. So they know the drill. They know how this goes, and I don't need to be up to boss them around or make it happen. So here we are, the Potomac River, right? Famous river. 184 miles from Cumberland, Maryland, down to Georgetown in Washington, D.C. This grand old ditch, as it was often called, operated from 1831 to 1924 along the river, primarily to carry coal. And as I already told you, after its demise, there was flooding in 1924. They never rebuilt, and some years later, it was saved by a few intrepid congressmen and turned into a park. So it's about this time I've persuaded myself to get up. I see the boys are taking bikes off the trailers, and we've all got anywhere from 40 to 60 pounds of gear on our bikes strapped on here and there, and a lot of the boys are, you know, wearing backpacks. And I would say they're cranking themselves up, right? We're winding. And again, it's something that Glenn talks about. In our own little individual experiences, we find that our motions, for the most part, are falling motions. But unfortunately, these motions do not seem to be continuous, perpetual, automatic. They have to be continually primed, cranked, or started by us. If we are not continually running out and cranking ourselves up again, we shortly run down. Moreover, we would be continually hitting the ground with a bump and landing on our heads instead of our feet, right? So I'm paying attention to this and I'm watching. And this is the boys getting cranked up, right? Because this three-day journey, they don't know it yet, but this is about balance and it is about falling. Not falling off a bike, but falling into your bike and moving forward, right? Because one of the good things about biking is you reach a point where it can't hurt anymore, right? You get going, and that first probably 15 to 20 miles is rough, and it, you know, your legs numb up, and your, you know, your buttocks maybe are feeling less than loved, and the thing that I know, and one of my, you know, important life lessons for these young men around me, I know once you get there, you just keep going. It's not going to hurt anymore. You just keep pedaling. And the boys have to learn that. I think, A, they're scared that it's going to keep hurting, right? We've only come this far, and it's already horrible. No, it's not going to get any worse. Just keep going, right? They also don't understand the energy required to get going again, right? Once you're going, once you have that muscle memory pedaling, don't stop. Keep going. Push forward. Because when you stop and have to get you and 50 pounds of gear going again and find your balance again, that's the hard part, right? So again, I know this isn't a super long bike trek, but this is a fabulous trip. You can do this. They have horses. You can hike this trail. But this is filled with sort of life lessons, right? When you take a walk, this 184 miles is in itself a spiritual journey, right? We have things along the way. The Pawpaw Tunnels, anybody ever heard of the Pawpaw Tunnel? It's an old train tunnel. So I guess kind of inserting this into the geography and the history, we had the canal, we've got the Potomac River, then you've got the canal, and then what do you think replaced the canal to bring coal out of the mountains? Train track, right? So you've got Potomac River, you've got canal, you've got train track, and then some places winding in and out of the train track are now roads that have been added for automobile traffic as well. So we come down next to this train, and part of the bike path, you have to go through the Pawpaw Tunnel, which is pitch black and delightfully scary, complete with stories of hauntings and murder and hidden treasure, and it's beautiful. You know, it's like this perfect place to take a bunch of boys. It's you get your pedaling on, and there's no lights in the tunnel, so we've all got our little headlamps on, and you're riding on this, you're kind of riding on a walking path. You don't ride, obviously, on the train tracks, but you're up above the train tracks, and there's cool water dripping down, and it's really slimy, but as you're pushing through, right, it feels like the deepest, darkest part of your journey, right? It feels like the valley of the shadow of death, right? And you get to come through there, and you get to watch the light grow at the end of the tunnel. You get to feel the fear as you go in and the jubilation as you come out of that trial, right? Because we get to reach a place in our life where we understand that some of our greatest happiness, much of our greatest happiness, comes out of our darkest hours, right? You get to go past Great Falls. So Great Falls, those are people that are kind of around Virginia and know it. It's just kind of a name, right? Well, they're falls, and I'm here to tell you they're pretty great, right? And so you come around on your bike. Anybody been there? It's like you come around on your bicycle, and you can kind of see it a little bit as you're riding. But then there's a place where you actually have to carry your bicycle upstairs and these wooden steps, and they have a little track where you can kind of put your wheels and kind of drag your bike up to the top to come around, and you get up at the top, and there's this panoramic view of these falls, which are not, don't picture Niagara Falls. This is more like a stepped waterfall that kind of comes that comes down from multiple levels, but it's fabulous. Right? And it's about it's a little more than halfway through the trip. It's because it's on the third day. But you get there, and it's just one of these absolute moments in time where you can stop and take it in and understand this is why we're here, right? It's one of those rewards, right? Unlike, you know, sometimes we do things. I went caving one time, and I'll get to use Ethan's name again here, so he'll be happy. This was actually my first trip as preparing to be Scoutmaster. I was going on a trip, and we went caving at Oregon Cave, and it was miserable. I'm a pretty bold guy. I like to do things. I've jumped out of airplanes. I've done a lot of cool things. Caving, not on my list. It's just very, you know, I just was very claustrophobic, and there's this little lady from West Virginia that's like browbeating me the entire way, like, keep up, you look like you work in an office. Well, yeah, I do, you know. So she's like moving me to the front of the line, so I'm setting the pace for everybody, and there are all these places where, like, I can't get through, like, with my backpack on, so I'm having to give it to a boy and get it back at the other end. But here's the story part. The whole time, we're heading for the waterfall room, right? So in my head, I'm pressing on, the waterfall room, the waterfall room. I can't wait to get to the waterfall room. And in my head, the waterfall room gets more magnificent with every step. You know, just this opening in the cave with, like, angels soaring around and, you know, rose garland across the way. And, oh, God, just get me to the waterfall room. And we get there, and it's like this trickle. Like, with some white slime, because there's no light, so there's no, you know, there's no chlorophyll, but just this green slime or white slimy mold, and just a little trickle of water. Like, oh, I'm so done. But we made it back out, and honestly, the highlight of the trip is we're coming back out, and the cave gets gradually wider and wider. This cave was actually used as a gunpowder plant for the Confederate soldiers during the Civil War. And then as a chapel, they had a big open room that they called the chapel room. And we're walking out, and we're kind of coming back up through the chapel room, and Ethan comes and catches up and asks if I need anything. I got everything. And he's, no, I'm fine. He's like, I'm really proud of you, Dad. I know that was super hard for you, but you did it. Just like, you know, yeah, see, that's an awe moment, right? All right, so there's three Ethan mentions, so yeah, there we go. Anyway, back to the C&O Canal. This is years later. I don't think, Ethan, you weren't even on this trip. You'd been on some earlier, shorter C&O trips, but Ethan wasn't even on this trip. So along the way, we're taking in nature. We have trees, we have river, we have train, we have history. We stopped along the way, and just off the trail is Antietam Battlefield, right? So Antietam, I think, still holds the count for the most American soldiers lost in a single battle, because there were American soldiers on, obviously, on both sides, the South and the North, and it was this brutal, brutal, bloody battle. And so we were able to kind of detour off the trail, and we stopped and had a church service on Sunday morning. It was mid-morning in this little chapel that's part of the national park at Antietam National Battlefield. And so we all got to sit in this chapel, which is where they did most of the funerals for people that had died during the battle, and where they held services during the battle. You know, it was just this unbelievable long weekend, and it was amazing to me the rhythm that we got into. You know, even just in 3 days, that practice, right, had started to settle in. Our butts hurt less, our legs hurt less, we slept better, we ate better. You know, everything had more life to it. And just in that little piece of time, we developed this rhythm, this balance, not just as individuals on our bikes, but as a group. And the boys supporting each other, the boys pushing each other on, the boys pushing me on, the boys making sure I kept up, right? Because that's always the rule. I'm last, right? I'm bringing up the rear. Some of them are young and strong enough to circle back around and make sure I'm still okay in the back, which is a nice thing. But we keep going, and as we're moving out of the mountains, again, sort of this spiritual journey, we kind of come down the mountains, we get past Great Falls. Now we're starting to get into the city, right? Because this trail starts in Podunk Nowhere and ends in the heart of our nation's capital, right? Georgetown, everybody familiar with Georgetown? There's big university there, and it's kind of an important place, right? So we start where we are in the mountains, and we end up, you know, in the shadow of the Washington Monument and the lawn, and kind of do a lap around downtown DC on our bicycles before we packed up and went home. And the whole time, and many times since, I've tried to go back and reflect on some of these journeys, right? And especially things where I went out with the scout troop and was able to do things that I would never, ever done without Boy Scouts, without that pushing, right? And so for me, that's absolutely part of my farther out journey, is to find those things and go out. I think it's also part of the service that we offer. You know, that's been a recurring theme this week too, right? That we serve those around us, and to be hopefully a role model for these guys has been epic, right? And then when you start to break it down and you start to think about uphill, right? Part of the journey is uphill. We have to pedal, we have to work, we have to remember to pray harder, right? Life becomes harder. We have to sometimes call for help, right? We have to maintain our equipment. We have to make sure our tires are inflated to the right air pressure. We have to make sure that our equipment is good. We have to make sure we're ready for the journey, right? Sometimes we get to coast. Sometimes we come up over a crest, over a hill, and you don't even need to have your feet on the pedals. You're just going, right? The thing that scares me is sometimes it's the coasting phases when I feel farthest away from God, right? When I feel like, hey, I've got this, right? I don't even have to pedal. I'm smoking it, right? But at the bottom of every coasting, there's usually another uphill, right? And then sometimes we have the nice level ground, just the place where you have to pedal, you're not working too hard, you're just using that muscle memory, you're balanced, you're riding along. And for me, that's what the towpath was. You know, it had a few little bumps for the locks along the way, but it was just such a nice ride. You didn't have to push too hard, you didn't have to spend a whole lot of time coasting and worrying if you were going to stop. Right, and along the way, you had these panoramic vistas, and you had this wonderful history. And to me, it just blends this entire journey and represented my entire journey in one Labor Day weekend. You know, some tunnels, a little bit of hill, pedal hard, keep pedaling, and you'll get there. So last thought from Glenn Clark, also from the thought farthest out. Just think of how much time would be saved if our educational system, while training people to do this or do that or learn this or learn that, would train them first and foremost in the art of balance. Right? So that's sort of my charge tonight. That's my thought for the night. is as we go, pray for, want for, work for balance in your life. That is where we find the steady drive to be who we are and to be the best people that we can be. Fair? Reasonable? All right, everybody stand up for me. Just a real quick one tonight. Repeat after me. Father, align us with you. Make our work play. Our creative effort effortless. Align us and make us irresistible. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. And we can now stay standing, join hands.